Welcome to Spartan Up Podcast. I'm Joe DeSena, CEO and founder of Spartan. Today we're doing a virtual intro for a special Mother's Day episode that includes an interview I did a few days ago with Janine Shepherd. Helping me out is my unwavering team. We got Dr. L, we got Johnny, we got Sephra, we've got Colonel Nye, and then behind the scenes, a mom herself that would drive me crazy if I didn't mention her, Marion Abrams. She really does the heavy lifting behind the scenes. Anyway, stay tuned for this. You're going to love this. When we come back, we are going to talk about what we've all learned from the moms in our lives, the special moms in our lives.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Athletic Brewing Company, pioneering a revolution in craft, non-alcoholic beers. Place your order today at athleticbrewing.com and get free shipping on 2 6-packs or more.
Spartans, we are here for Spartan Up Podcast with Janine Shepherd. She is probably the most resilient, most gritty, has more perseverance than, I don't know, than a shepherd, right? I mean, she is tough as nails. A lot of people in the Spartan world might not know your story, but they probably do. I saw, I think, a TED Talk. Was it a TED Talk that I saw?
Yeah, you saw my TED Talk.
You crushed it. So can you would you mind going backwards and telling us the story?
You know, I have and always have been an athlete. In fact, you know, I'm quite happy for you to call me by my nickname, Janine the Machine, because I know a lot of Spartan people out there are machines. So I started my athletic career at, you know, age 6 or 7, track and field, did all the sports, ended up in cross-country skiing, which people think is unlikely for an Australian, but yes, we have snow. And I was in the Australian ski team, invited to train with the Canadian team, one of the best in the world, in the lead up to the 88 Winter Olympics in Calgary. I was on a training bike ride with my teammates, and with around 30 minutes to go on the ride, I was run over by a truck and suffered extensive and life-threatening injuries. The worst of those, actually, the non-visible, was internal bleeding. I lost 5 liters of blood. But I broke my neck and my back in 6 places, 5 ribs, collarbone, arm, you name it. Spent 6 months in a spinal ward and was told that everything, my life was over, basically. My life as an athlete was over. So I left in a wheelchair and a plaster cast and got home depressed, obviously. And you know, a lot of things happened. I mean, it was the dark night of the soul. And I decided that I really wanted to find out why I came back to my body. And when I did, and I sort of surrendered, I guess, to my experience, an aeroplane flew over and I decided, that's it. If I can't walk, I'll fly. And so I went on and became a pilot and wrote 6 books and did a TED Talk. And yeah, so that's sort of the elevator pitch, Joe.
I mean, how does that happen, right? When I hear about amazing, I think it's more often than not, I haven't looked at the data, but like amazing athletes or stories. I was just on the phone with somebody who at 13 years old had their arm ripped off while wakeboarding and now is the strongest one-armed athlete in the world. And yeah. So what happens when that trauma hits that all of a sudden, I wouldn't say changes because you were already that kind of person, right?
Yeah, I think I tell people I'm still Janine the Machine. It's just that I've, I think for me, what it comes down to is, and a lot of people say this to me all the time, particularly athletes, you know, if I lost the ability to do what I do, I don't know how I'd continue in my life. And so for me, you know, this elite athlete, the way I defined myself in the world was through my sport and my body. You know, I was very obviously this sort of very strong, physically strong person, and that's how I put myself forward in the world. So the one thing that was going to wake me up to my potential and who I really was to lose the thing that I thought defined me, which was my body. It was a very painful and cruel journey, but it's been also very rich with many blessings. So I was in my final year at uni. I was going to be an exercise physiologist. I wanted to work at the Institute of Sport in Canberra. You know, it was all about the body. For me, it was all about getting maximum performance out of my body. So, you know, ironically, when I lost my body, I realized that my strength actually had nothing to do with my body. And I have to say that for all athletes, actually. our strength doesn't come from our body. It comes from our mind. So that the turnaround for me was, you know, I really dived deeply into the psychology of the mind, you know, neuroscience, neuroplasticity. I finished my sports science degree, but then I really dived deeper into the mind and how to help other people create a resilient life despite what's going on the outside. It's never about the outside, by the way. It's always about the inside.
How do you do it? What are some tips and tricks? Like what would, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about our children. I've got 4 children here. And I push them pretty hard, whether that's right or wrong, time will tell. Just like any normal human being, you could see them breaking at points. Like, I don't want to do anymore. I don't want to climb anymore. What are some of the things you learn that kind of help you get a human get past that?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's really important to acknowledge that these are really challenging times for everyone. It's exhausting. We're sort of weary. Would you agree? Everyone's sort of weary. And, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, I learned very early on that I'm a very positive and optimistic person, but sometimes, you know, you just have to have a day off. You know, you just have to stop pushing so hard and say, you know what, it's okay. We're human, you know, with our kids, with ourselves, have a day off. And I've found that these times people are actually working harder. You know, we're sort of like head down and everyone's just like, got to get out content, got to keep going, got to keep working, got to, and that is exhausting. Have a day off, have weekends, you know. I mean, I think there's a very, you know, it's very easy to sort of work every day when you're working from home, right? You got to admit, it's just like constant. So let me go, you know, back a little bit about kids, because you said you had 4, right? So they didn't think I'd have kids. I'm a mother of 3 kids and 3 very resilient kids. And one thing we know from studies, particularly from C.R. Snyder from the University of Kansas, who did hope theory, we know that hope is a really important ingredient to resilience. It's actually part of my course as well. And hope theory says that children learn resilience from the people closest to them. And when people ask me, how do we teach resilience to our kids? What I say is, well, just cultivate it in yourself, because they're watching you very, very closely. They're watching you. They're learning from you. My kids have seen me fall down and get up so many times that it's part of their DNA. It's just natural for them now. So I would try to, for anyone out there with kids right now, helping them, a really important tool. I have a ritual that I do every morning, and we know the power of gratitude. Okay, we know that that works. We know that it rewires the brain. So why not incorporate that into our family life with our kids? So in the morning, you get up together, you sit in a circle, you sit around the table, and you all tell each other what you're grateful for. 3 things, 1 thing, 3 things, it doesn't matter. And go around the table and put aside some time with your kids to do this, right? Now, one of the things about gratitude is that what's really important to rewire our brains is to actually savor the experience, because you want to rewire the neural networks in your brain. That's the whole idea of resilience and neuroplasticity, right? Change our brains. So I would say with people with kids, have a gratitude or a practice of grace, as I call it, in the morning. Sit around with your kids and just spend some time with them, talk about what you're grateful for. Maybe have a short, you know, little meditation practice at the end where you all close your eyes and you imagine that thing that you're grateful for. You actually bring it into your world. Now, for all the athletes out there, I know that they're really good at visualization. And Joe, I know you're really good at it too. You know, that was one of my strengths, being able to visualize walking again and doing all the things that I've done. So infuse that gratefulness, close your eyes, and just imagine that thing and savor that thing and feel it. That's how we change our brains. And that's what resilience is all about.
No, I agree. I when I'm having a tough time, and this is without proper training, mental training, but when I'm having a tough time, I say, well, it could be worse. I could be living in Siberia in the middle of winter with no food, right? I could be dead. And when you do that, for me, it helps me be grateful for the things I have, right? Yeah. So even though I'm suffering at this moment in time, and so, all right, you gave me a good idea. The good news is the kids see me doing it all day, every day, so they know I get after it. I now have to, from the time I grab their feet and drag them out of bed, I'm going to have to stop in the kitchen and we'll have to, I'll have to throw them into a headlock of four and say, what are we grateful for, while they turn purple because I'm not letting them go. I got to work on that. My wife is good. At the end of the day, she'll say, hey, give us, you know, the best thing that happened today and the worst thing that happened. And so that's a fun little exercise.
That's a great way to end the day. But I also think a gratitude practice is a great way to start the day. I mean, a lot of people forget that, you know, we can do the gratitude practice. So we're sort of rewiring our brain before we even start. And we're sort of setting ourselves into a, you know, a mentality of optimism. And the other thing you can finish it with, okay, so what would make today great? You know, what would make today great? You know, finishing that piece or doing that, whatever it is. Or, you know, if you're having, you know, a day where you're exhausted, you know, what would make today great would be going and having a really luxurious bubble bath and just having some time to myself and resetting. I mean, I think people like, you know, athletes can push so hard that sometimes we forget to give ourselves a self-compassion break. And that's really also another really important tool that we can teach our kids, is that, you know, we'd sometimes, something simple, let me tell you something simple, and your wife would know this, oxytocin, which is the bonding hormone, we get that from hugging people. Now, a lot of people aren't doing a lot of hugging right now, but we can hug ourselves. We can put our hand on our heart and still get a release of oxytocin and have a self-compassion break. So, you know, there's a lot of tools that we can do to get us through these really challenging times.
We're going to jump right back to that interview in just a minute, but I want to talk to you about Athletic Brewing. They're the sponsor of today's episode. We met their founder, Bill Schufelt, at a Spartan race. He was a super authentic guy, and he told us why he started Athletic Brewing. He started it for people who love craft beers but don't want the alcohol. He uses high-quality, all-natural, all-organic ingredients to create brews for everyone. They have a Run Wild IPA, an Upside Down Golden Ale, a Freeway Double Hop IPA, and they're all without alcohol, but they taste like the best craft beers. Beer's been used through the ages as a great replenishment option after exertion. Now you can enjoy an award-winning craft beer taste anytime without worrying about the alcohol. Keep a clear head, drink healthy when you want a beer with friends or family or to refuel after a race. You shouldn't have to sacrifice your ability to be healthy, active, and at your best to enjoy a great beer. In fact, we at Spartan believe in them so much, they're available as a finisher beer at U.S. races. Athletic Brewing is a company pioneering a revolution in craft, non-alcoholic beers. Place your order today at athleticbrewing.com. And don't forget, you get free shipping on 2 6-packs or more. Okay, back to Janine Shepherd.
I think in Iceland, the government was recommending that people hug trees for 5 minutes.
That's cool. That's really great. I like that.
There was an article out. I'm not much of a hugger. So does that mean I have an oxytocin problem?
Hopefully not oxytocin. that would be a problem. You know, hugging's a great thing. I learned to hug properly from a friend of mine, one of my great friends and a spiritual teacher called Bhakti Das. And he used to hug me and I'd be like, hug. He'd be like, hug. And he wouldn't let me go. And at first I was really uncomfortable. I was like, oh, this is a little uncomfortable. And then I just sort of let go and relaxed into it. And I realized, hey, this is pretty cool. And now, of course, when I hug my hubby, you know, I'm like, hug him. And if he goes to get away really quickly, I'm like, ah, 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 ah. Hug in, come on, no patting on the back, give a proper hug. So yeah, we can teach our kids to hug. So there's so many tricks and tools, and of course goal setting is really important now too.
Let's talk about goal setting with kids.
Goal setting with kids, well, part of hope theory, people think that hope is a wishy-washy thing, you know, like, oh, wishful thinking, I hope it's going to get better. Actually, hope is actually a cognitive skill. And that's what C.R. Snyder talks about in his hope theory. It's made of goals, pathways, and agencies. So one of the things, so for people wondering out there, I actually am a paraplegic, but I'm walking. So I learned to walk again through the power of neuroplasticity. So when I got home from hospital and I was in a wheelchair and I decided to walk again, one of the things that really turned my life around was when I decided I'd learn to fly. Of course, everyone thought it was crazy. I was in a wheelchair, a plaster body cast. That's ridiculous. But it filled my life with joy. And I went, you know, I was lifted into an airplane for the first flight. you know, fast forward, I went on and became a commercial pilot, an aerobatics flying instructor. I mean, things that I never would have dreamt of before my accident. But what it was just I had a goal. You know, I had something, I had a reason to get out of bed in the morning. You know, I couldn't train anymore. The Olympics were out, but I could fly. And then I threw myself into that with a gusto. And, you know, I still had my values in life, you know, being determined, being, you know, persevering, hard work, challenging myself. So my values, my core values were the same. What I was able to do is redirect them down another pathway. So part of hope theory is goals, pathways, and agency. Very important, particularly this time that we're all going through. Make sure your kids write down something that they really want to do. You know, have a list. Maybe do the, you know, the 25-5 rule, which is write down 25 things that they really want to do, circle the top five, start with the top one, something like that. Pathways, of course, is looking at different ways. So, you know, this is a fun exercise to do with kids too. What do you want to do? Okay, what are the problems you might come up against and how, what sort of answer, what's another way that you would find a way through, around, over that obstacle, right? And then agency is the belief that I can do this. You know, this is willpower. And, you know, a great exercise for that is to say, okay, think back over your life, a time that you thought you wouldn't be able to do something. What happened? You know, how did you get over that? What strengths did you tap into? What personal strengths that you have? And what did you learn from that? So there's so many exercises. I think right now, with our kids, with all of us actually, we need to make sure that we have, you know, things that we can look forward to, because we know that looking forward to something releases dopamine in our brains, the reward, you know, neurotransmitter. So we want to keep, that's how we motivate. That's how we self-motivate. You know, what have I got to look forward to? And then imagining that.
What if you lose motivation? What if, you know, I get asked all the time, Joe, you're so motivated, or at least I play a motivated person on TV, right?
Yeah.
But that people don't realize that we all have motivational issues we got to work through. What do you do in that case, right? They lay in bed a half hour longer than they should. They don't do the training they're supposed to. They don't eat the way they're supposed to. What do you do?
Well, I think, you know, motivation, well, let's take out the whole mental health issues, because there's a lot of people with mental health issues right now. And that's a whole other issue. But firstly, I'd say, you know, is it something that you really want to do? You know, a lot of people do things that are not actually really authentically what I call goals with soul. You know, firstly, you've got to make sure you have a goal with soul. This is something I really want. This is not something my husband, wife, kids, parents, teachers want. This is something that really resonates with me. You know, I think if you really find something that resonates with you, then motivation's not a problem. Now, it's okay to have days when you're not motivated. That's fine. Have a day off. You know, during my writing, often I remember once I was, my last book I was writing actually, I went through a sort of a patch where I was like, oh, I'm really over this. I'm really struggling. I can't write. And a screenwriter friend of mine said, close your computer and have 2 weeks off. I was like, I can't. I'm on a deadline. He said, do it. And I did. And I closed my computer and I just took 2 weeks off. And, you know, I came back and I was motivated and strong and I just started writing and just came. But I think that time off, you know, I think particularly now, like for someone that's having those days now, say, okay, you know, I'm having a weekend. You know, it's not gonna hurt to have a day where you just, you know, you just watch telly or you have a bath or you go for a walk, you forget about your training, just take some time off, you know, do some meditating, do some journaling, that sort of thing. And I guarantee you'll come back and you will be motivated. So I think having a break, having a weekend is a good idea, particularly now.
Yeah.
Now when every day seems the same. Every day is the same, right?
It is Groundhog Day. It's so funny.
It is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Every day is the same. Every day I wake up for just a minute and I think, is this really happening?
Yeah.
Am I shut down in 45 countries? Did I have to furlough 75% of my staff? And, you know, it's a reality. But so I'm doing all these live workouts and live podcasts and everything. And so
are you having a day off?
48 days straight.
Yeah, you need a day off, Joe.
Need a day off, but
have a weekend. You know, get a board game out, play with
those.
Kids. You know, have a day where you go, you know what? I'm gonna play board games with my kids. I'm gonna sit in front of the telly and eat popcorn. I'm gonna just be a slob. give yourself a break. You know, I mean, wow, this is actually, you know, these times are really, really a gift. You might never have this time again with your kids and your family. You might never have the time to take a breather and just go, oh, what, you know, what's really important in my life? Because you know what? It is what it is, you know, and the more we struggle with this, the harder it is. You know, I feel like I spent almost 6 months in a spinal ward, and most of that was lying flat on my back, staring at a ceiling, you know. And I didn't have a choice. And I learned a lot from that time. And, you know, it was a really rich time. It was very painful, but it was also very rich. And these times are painful for many, but they're also very rich. And we can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, I tell people, you know, if I had gotten in touch with you a year ago, and said, listen, in 2020, why don't we take March and April off? Stay at home. You know, there'll be a little dip in the economy. There'll be, you know, 300 million people probably get laid off. But you stay at home with your family. I think everybody would have given each other a high five.
Right? Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I think just the uncertainty is what drives people crazy. But the actual reality of what we're going through, I mean, you look at some of the old footage on Netflix of World War II or World War I, like, we have Netflix, most of us have food available, like, you know what I mean? Like, these people were living in rubble. Like you said, you were laying, looking at a ceiling for 6 months.
Yeah, with a catheter and a, you know, I mean, the whole, I was, you know, in pain. And here's another thing, you look at countries like, I saw a tweet recently from a doctor, I think it was in India, who said social distancing is a privilege. It means you have a house.
I like that a lot. I like that a lot. I mean, go into Mexico City, right? Dead center of Mexico City or Delhi. I love that. That's a great sentence.
You know, and I'm trying to find the rest of his tweet as I'm scrolling through this. But, you know, it's true. We have roofs over our head. We can turn a tap and get hot water. We have beds to sleep in. I think, you know, there is a real perspective. At the same time, it's a balance between, you know, being kind and compassionate to ourselves during challenging times, but also, you know, being optimistic and positive and grateful for all that we have.
I love it. I want to end it with that, if that's okay with you. That's that really put it in perspective. Perspective is such a good word. I mean, that's probably what got you through those 6 months in the hospital too, right? You weren't dead.
Yeah, no. And you know, as I said, there are many incredible lessons in the spinal ward about gratitude, about, you know, one of the most important lessons I learned, which is a great message that comes from Viktor Frankl. You know, if you can't change the circumstances of your life, you're forced to change your attitude towards them. So I realized that, you know, this is a situation that I couldn't control. I was paralyzed in the spinal ward. And so I had to change my attitude.
So let's change our attitudes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can do it. It's easy.
How would, if somebody wanted to buy all six of your books, how would they do it?
Well, I wouldn't say buy all six. I'd say buy the latest one, Defiant, which incorporates all of my story. And in fact, I haven't told you this, where... So my Defiant has just, well, it's been optioned in Hollywood and we're just about to sign on a screenwriter.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting. Yeah.
Exciting. Can I play a role? I don't want to be the truck driver.
Well, no, you don't want to be the truck driver. What role would you like?
Give me a good role. I don't know, something good, something uplifting.
Okay, I'll do that, and I'll make sure you get a red carpet ticket. And yeah, we're really excited. So I'm excited that these producers saw my TED talk and reached out to me, and we've been looking for a really great A-list screenwriter for 2 years, and we finally found her, and I'm pretty excited about that.
That's awesome. I love to hear good stories like that. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's exciting.
All right. Well, take care. I'm glad we finally got to do this. And you have my information. I have yours. Let's stay in touch.
Fantastic. It's been great. And you have a fantastic, resilient day.
And you too. And I'm, my kids' trajectories are going to pivot now because of your tips. So
thank you. Well, I look forward to following and touching, you know, touching base again and seeing how you're all going.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
All right. See you, Joe.
I told you Janine was going to be awesome. Was she awesome? Colonel Nye, what'd you think of that? I mean, she gets hit by a truck and she, I don't know, she's full of energy. She's full of life. She's happy. She's smart.
Oh, she's refocused. I like what she says. I watched the interview and then I was intrigued enough. I went back and watched her TED Talk as well. And her title, if you will, and maybe it's on one of her six books, is A Broken Body is Not a Broken Person. And so that's her mindset, right? And so she talks about being hurt helped her refocus her efforts in another area, and talking about, you know, not letting the circumstances rule your outcome. And so, you know, I've heard this a lot in the military from all the guys rehabbing, that kind of stuff. But it's, you know, it's a beautiful mindset, and it's incredible when you can actually achieve it.
I think if you say it enough, right? If she does the TED Talk, she does enough interviews, you've probably seen this happen with vets. You tell me, but if you say it enough and you believe in that mantra and it becomes your narrative, then you start to live it.
I know Dr. Laura's got a phrase for this. I know when you start believing in yourself, the character you make of yourself, right? If you think of yourself as a leader and you start setting examples, that becomes your responsibility and that feeds you to do it more often. And so if she believes she's this, she's driven to be that.
We all have broken parts. We all have fractures, and it doesn't have to become our identity. It just is a part of who we are, and not all of who we are. You know, so I think from that perspective, I love sort of that angle of having fractured parts, but not being an entire fractured being. And as you said, Colonel, you know, we become what we think we are, and to have that mindset of like continuing to move forward, and the mindset of resiliency, right, is an important one to have.
I love how she framed it too, when she said that to realize her actual potential, she had to lose the one thing that she felt defined her. So she was so defined by her physicality and the one thing she was very, very good at, which was amazing. But it wasn't until she lost that she found out how much more she was capable of beyond that. And then to your point about resiliency, she talked about gratitude and how she had to stop and give gratitude for what she still had. And that's where she was able to find the resilience and the neuroplasticity to build the new her. So even in that hardest moment, and she called it, you know, the dark soul of the night, she found things to be grateful for. And once you find that, then you can build upon that.
And I think something so relevant that she says is, she quoted Viktor Frankl, who says, if you can't change your situation, change your attitude. And certainly the situation we're all in now, it's a matter of like, what do you want your existence to be, or how do you want your story to be told during this time?
Imagine if a person without those physical limitations was to apply this superpower, right? These basic tactics. Johnny, every once in a while, if I give you a signal, just duck because there's a shark coming over your head. But let's dive into the moms in our lives. I probably had the best mom just because I pretty much win at everything. Colonel Nye, I'm interested at what kind of mom you had. I don't know much about your mom. I know about your uncle. Tell me about your mom.
Yeah, my mom's interesting. And I've had to reconsider her many times in my life. My mother and I fought from the day I was born. But when I go back now that I'm an adult, my mother was an orphan, raised in an orphanage. I don't believe graduated high school, married young, married a guy with no high school education, and somehow had four children by the time she was, you know, mid-20s. So you take that, not a lot of life experiences there to raise children, went on to have five children, but not a lot of life experiences. But when we talk about fractured, so she could have had a very fractured background or life, but for my mother, what was always important is that her children were dressed properly, acted properly, were polite, did well in school, were always the best at what they did. Really not the best, but had to try their best at everything, and had to represent the family at all times. That was, to her, was extraordinarily important. And so I fought and rebelled against that for years as a teenager and everything else. But when I look back now, you know, that was, I don't know where she got those skills from, but she definitely pushed us all. The first four kids were all college graduates with multiple degrees and everything else. And again, no reason to believe that that was going to happen. But through her force of will, it did.
You know what I learned from my mom? So many people talk about not having enough time, and they're always trying to find more time. And if they just had more time, they'd get more things done. My mom was an absolute master of using every little minute and never seeming stressed. She just always had a little project on the go. I remember she carried a basket around that had the notes she wanted to write and the things she wanted to do. And she had a great saying, and it was, sure, you can't do everything all at once, but you can certainly do something all at once. And so she was always doing something, and it was almost always for someone else. And so I know that someday when she's remembered, it will be as someone who made a huge contribution to so many people, but never waiting for the big home run shot. She just hit single after single after double after triple, and just was always manufacturing positive results for other people, but not waiting till she had enough time, just always working on little things along the way. And that's something I've learned from her.
So the thing I think that I learned most from my mom was really through observation. She and my father ran a nonprofit business for 34 years together. And so it became like a third sibling for us, and was almost like the business itself was almost a part of the family. And just through observation, I think the thing that I learned the most is you can be kind and have difficult conversations. I bore witness to many conversations where voices were elevated and clearly it was uncomfortable, but also at the same time, there was kindness. And so for me, I think that's really important as a woman and as a mother myself to know that, listen, I can have hard conversations and at the same time be kind to the people that I'm having these conversations with, and just in general in my life. And I'm so grateful for that lesson because it has allowed me to build really strong connections with people and in relationships because of that communication and that honesty.
My mom, she's like my best friend, you know, I call her the queen. I've learned a lot from her. Actually, really similar lessons to both what Colonel Nye and Johnny have said. I grew up with whatever you do, do something. And like, do it well and with integrity and dignity, or to the best of your ability. And that was, you know, the same thing, like you're presenting your family. And there was also a lot of the don't complain, don't explain, like don't have excuses. You know what I mean? Get things done and just own what you do and move forward. So I think that's a lot of how I've been raised. Now that sounds like, you know, like a little hard, but actually there was a lot of like bohemian anthropomorphism fort building built in. So for me, like stuffed animals are real. The trees are alive. Everything speaks. So it's like, if you didn't eat the vegetables on the plate, it would be like, we have to be with our brothers and sisters. So now for me, you know, I kind of walk through the world where everything's alive. And I have like deep reverence and respect for that because I was raised with kind of in that relationship. So to all the moms out there, to Mama Nature, blessings for all the lessons that we learn and continue to learn. And, Marion, what about your mama? I love your mama.
So my mom, I would say the one thing is we definitely had our difficulties. We had some difficult times in our relationship, but even at the worst of times and when she was having real struggles in her life, I never questioned that she loved me. And that, I think, gave me a platform to stand on and gave me just this sort of solid starting point for everything else I do in the world and enabled me to be a little bit more generous and a little bit more grounded. And I think that's the one thing that I try to bring to my kids. There's so much I don't know whether I'm doing it right or not, but I think if they know I love them, they start with a full cup when they walk into the world. So that's what I try to do.
And I think about my mom would do anything, just like any mom out there. She would have did anything for me. She was always there. She made a left turn in life in the early 70s. She found yoga, meditation. She became vegan at a time when it was not accepted, in a place that was not accepted. I mean, all we talked about in our neighborhood was raviolis. You know, we talked about this. Raviolis, concrete, and jail was the main topics of conversation in Queens, where I grew up. And she goes and becomes vegan, starts studying yoga, meditates, and really fought the whole world, her world right around her, which was me, my sister, my dad, everybody said she was a crazy person, both very much like Sephra, even more extreme. And she fought for 20 years. She died before she saw me and my sister get into, and the world get into everything she was pushing. There was no yoga journal back then. There was nothing. So moms will go above and beyond, but they'll also, when they find what they believe is the right way, they'll fight the whole world to do what they believe in. So what's the old famous Spartan saying, Johnny? Spartan men only exist because Spartan women gave birth to them.
That is very true, Joe.
You know, I think back, Tim, you'll appreciate this, but I think back to the movie Gladiator. At the very end, after Russell Crowe is dead, the wife is saying something to the crowd and saying, he was a soldier of Rome, honor him. And I would say, we need a line for that for all the moms, you know. Moms, they are soldiers, honor them. And I get chills even thinking about that. So I'd love to hear from everybody out there about their moms and some great stories just to show how unbreakable they are. And one thing that saddens me, though, is that this was so much fun doing it virtually and seeing all you guys that I'm actually afraid that we're never going to get together again, that this is the way we're going to do it on computers.
We will show up uninvited.
Yeah, we'll come back.
Don't you worry, Joe. We will see you again.
I am not worried about Sephra, by the way. I meant everybody else. Sephra seems to be anywhere I am on the planet. She shows up.
You go to good places. You go to great places.
Happy Mother's Day to Laura. Happy Mother's Day to Marion. Happy Mother's Day.
I'm mothers to many seeds.
Sephra's mom. Love you guys.
Good luck.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Happy Mother's Day. Bye.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Athletic Brewing Company, pioneering a revolution in craft, non-alcoholic beers. Place your order today at athleticbrewing.com and get free shipping on 2 6-packs or more.